Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Life is about choices. We have chosen Fulham.
We're not Real Madrid, but we can probably still batter Newcastle. That's the message tonight on the Fulham Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and Guy Barlow and Dom Betts, of course, from Fulhamish. Great to have you here, gents. And first of all, you were in Wolverhampton and you managed to see 53 games of football in one day, Dom, but you didn't manage to see a Fulham win.
I didn't manage to see a goal. Real honest, a kind of sort of fouled goal if I'm watching it in the clubhouse of the ground.
Doesn't count.
No, it doesn't count.
But no, yeah, it was. I mean, to be fair, it says 1-0, but it wasn't actually a bad game. There was plenty of chances. I don't know how Diego Jota didn't score for Wolves. He seemed to just every time blaze it just a tiny bit wide of the post. He was very dangerous. He seems to get a lot of power behind the shots. But yeah, I thought, you know, a 1-0 loss at a team who's going to finish 7th and, you know, are going to probably push United and Arsenal for top 6 next season isn't a bad result. You know, if we had we had two very, very, very good chances in the second half of Mitrovic's chance. You expect him to bury that when Sessegnon plays it. Mm. He weights it perfectly across to him, and I don't know what Mitrovic is sort of doing. He just doesn't get his foot over the ball. And then, obviously, there's a second chance when I think Chambers plays a phenomenal ball down the wing to Sessegnon. And then Sessegnon gets the ball back to Mitrovic. He lays it off to Kearney, and Kearney can't quite curl it in. And I mean, even Joe Bryan in the first half had a couple of chances.
Yeah,
I mean,
that was a good save.
There was one that was made a good save, and there was one where I think the ball got played over the top to him, and there was sort of just no one in the box, so he had a ping, and yeah, it was well saved by Rui Patricio. But yeah, I still thought the performance, and we looked relatively solid defensively. So I mean, yeah, I guess the winning run and the clean sheet runs over, but you know, we still looked a lot better than we have. You know, I think Scott Parker mentioned it in his post-match press conference. He was like, "Well, we're talking about the fine margins of the football game now. We're not talking about bigger issues," which is right. And you know, it's still on the positive going into Newcastle this weekend. Hopefully, we can, you know, finish the season on and up.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Sergio Rico got man of the match for the third game in a row as well. I think he's closing the season in good form, which is good for him, I guess. It's good for his future career because he's obviously looking for a move now. He's not going to go back to Sevilla. He's not going to stay with us in the Championship. So it's good for him personally. But like you said, I mean, it's always going to be a tough place to go. I mean, I know Wolves have struggled to break down teams of our kind of
stature in the league.
Yeah,
Lost twice against Huddersfield.
Exactly. But they dominated, really. And like you said, Dom, like Hotter should have had a couple, I reckon.
Yeah, he could have easily had 3 or 4 in that game. And it was just one of those games where you knew it just wasn't going to go for Hotter.
Yeah, but likewise, our front man, Mitrovic, like...
It was a very off day for him, actually.
Yeah, but you could even argue he's been out of form for a while. Like, I know he got the penalty at Bournemouth, but he missed a chance last week at home to Cardiff. That was a big chance. He missed a couple... Again, you know, he missed one away at Crystal Palace, I seem to remember. He does seem to be taking a while, maybe, to grow into games. And he I don't know. I remember Pete from the Football Ramble, who's a big Newcastle fan, talk about how, you know, Mitrovic does need a couple of chances to get going. He was one of those strikers, like Lukaku or something. But yeah, I mean,
yeah, I think he's one of the strikers. Once he's in a run of form, you can't stop him. But it takes him a while to maybe get into that run of form. But his hold up play has still been great over all season long. So I think if I remember one, there was one game. I think it was Leicester home game, which we drew. Was it 1-1 or 2-2?
It was 1-1. Yeah,
1-1 when Kamara and Maddison, I think, scored for them. It was like, oh, that's one of the best performances I've seen from a Fulham striker when they haven't scored. So his hold-up play has still been great. It's just he sort of lost his finishing touch, and you know, the chance he got on Saturday, you do expect him to score.
Absolutely. And of course, one club who are now in desperate need of a finishing touch this evening are Spurs. They went into that Champions League semi-final against Ajax already 1 goal down, an away goal, of course. They now find themselves 1-0 down on the night of the second leg. It's 2-0 on aggregate. 19-year-old Ajax captain Matthijs de Ligt giving them the lead inside 5 minutes. Do you give them a prayer?
Well, to be fair to Spurs, this goal doesn't affect them really in any way. They still would have had to score two goals tonight to go through unless they were planning on winning on penalties. So I think it shouldn't really... Yes, it's a setback, but it shouldn't really affect their mindset. I think that, you know, they still need to score two goals tonight. I do think Ajax will go through tonight. I think I said that before. But I do... But yeah, I don't think it should affect Spurs too much. But obviously, it's great. It's going to be Ajax on the up. And, you know, yeah, it'll be tough for them. But, you know, again, it doesn't affect what they have to do in this game.
No, I'm sure you're with me, Dom, that I the person who I want to win tonight is the person who's going to give Liverpool the most trouble in the final. You know, but like you said about it not changing much, it was the same like last night. Even when Barcelona were 3-0 down, it didn't actually change that much. They still needed to just score one. And it's the same with Spurs tonight.
It's a real shame it wasn't 124th minute Luis Suarez offside winner, but
yeah. A reminder, of course, that VAR is in action in the Champions
doesn't
League.
Doesn't mean it's going to get it right.
That's right.
If you look at Napi Cagliari game from the weekend, that was definitely not a penalty.
Yeah, and I was looking at the.
Oh my word, gentlemen! You're giving Spurs a chance. That first goal you said didn't change anything for them. This second Ajax goal surely does. It's Ajax 2, Tottenham 0, 3-0 to Ajax on aggregate. It's been scored by Hakim Ziyech, who has, of course, been linked with a move to White Hart Lane. Now, the situation has changed pretty drastically. Are they dead and buried?
Yeah, brown bread.
Yeah, I can't see him getting three goals tonight. Although I do think at times they are a better team if they're trying to counterattack without Harry Kane in the side, just because I think they're a bit more mobile going forward. I can't see him getting three against Ajax. Ajax will want to have the ball. They're not going to be easy counterattacks, and I just don't see it. You know, this maybe is as far as Spurs can go, and what a story it would really be. It'd be crazy, obviously, if Ajax somehow do beat Liverpool, and I hope they do beat Liverpool if they are to progress to the final. You know, there could be a team to win the Champions League but still lose all their best players.
It's a glorious goal from Ziyech, by the way. He gets the ball on the edge of the box, just whacks it in inside that right post. Glorious, glorious goal. A glorious time to get it, and tough for Tottenham. But Liverpool have set the scene. They've set the scene for English clubs in a Champions League semi-final where you look dead and buried. You look, Guy Barlow, in your words, brown bread, and yet you turn into, I don't know what the opposite of brown bread is, white bread doesn't work because you're rhyming on dead. They brought themselves back to life, didn't they? Tottenham could possibly do that, or do they lack that Anfield factor?
They lack playing a team who's Barcelona in a Champions League knockout game. That's what they're lacking. This happened exactly the same time last year I think it was the quarterfinals actually, but when they played Roma last year, yes, I know Roma got that away goal, but it's still, and you'd argue the gulf in quality between Roma and that Barcelona team and this Liverpool team at Barcelona isn't too much. You know, I think that people are wowing over Liverpool from last night without sort of realising how bad Barcelona were.
No,
I think, was it Mundo Deportivo in Spain gave Coutinho and Rakitic a zero.
I think Rakitic, that's a little bit harsh, actually.
It's Mundo Deportivo. Yeah. I mean, what were you expecting here?
But Coutinho, I completely understandable. But Barcelona, they were a disgrace, really. Like this, you know,
they were all over the place last night.
And it changed when Semedo came on at right back, didn't it? And it actually had a bit more solidity. And then they were eventually undone. But the one goal that's done them for it is a quick corner, you know, which should have been
switched
on.
That's just schoolboy defending.
Yeah, but like...
Well, it is, but it's glorious, intelligent play, isn't it, from Trent Alexander-Arnold?
Yeah, and like I said, yeah, but
I want a glorious play. He's played a ball into the box. Like,
come off it, Dom. He's waited until the Barcelona defence have switched off, shown a bit of gamesmanship to effectively dummy not taking the corner at all, caught them napping, set up the centre forward for what is a very straightforward finish.
Yeah, but it's Barcelona not being switched on more than it's brilliant play from Trent Alexander-Arnold.
That's true, but you've got to capitalise, haven't you?
Yeah, that's what I think Liverpool did. I don't think Liverpool played phenomenal last night. They definitely played better this season. They won the game because Barcelona weren't simply at the races. You know, Messi didn't seem interested. Suarez, I don't know what he was playing at last night.
Ter Stegen should have saved the second goal as well.
Yeah, Ter Stegen, you could have argued two of the goals he should be saving. So I think...
Alisson had made a couple of good saves, three good saves.
You lot really don't like Liverpool, do you?
No, but I'm just saying, like...
It's not Liverpool putting this world-class performance. It's Barcelona simply won at the races last night.
And they set up to play a certain way as well. And they just had no pace going forward. I know Dembele was injured. And arguably, you know, everyone's going on about the chance he missed at 3-0 last week to make it 4. But they had no pace on the counter. Sergio Roberto was moving all over from right back to right wing to left wing when Vidal came off.
Even like, when Fulham transfer target Malcolm came on, I just didn't understand what he was. I didn't understand what he was playing at.
Is that how Malcolm is addressed by his mum? Do you reckon Fulham transfer target Malcolm?
I suspect that's how a lot of players are addressed by their parents. You know,
Fulham transfer target Lionel Messi.
Gareth Bale was a genuine transfer target at one point.
Colton Cole.
Oh. Perennial transfer target.
The greats.
Jason Kumas.
The perennial greats.
Who would you rather, Lionel Messi or Jason Kumas?
Have you not seen Jason Kumas hit a dead ball?
I have.
I'd rather Jason Kumas in the championship than Lionel Messi, without a doubt.
Now, we've just been given a question by our producer, and it's the biggest question of all, really. It's life or death. It's existential. Lionel Messi or Brian McBride?
Well, if I want someone winning a header in around a 6-yard box, it's going to be Brian McBride, isn't it?
If you want,
does Messi have a bar named after him at the new Camp? No. Whereas we have one after McBride, so clearly McBride's winning it.
Right.
Yeah. Messi might get a stand when he finishes, but he hasn't finished yet. So, you know what? Based on that logic, he's losing, isn't he?
Just give a bar name.
How many times has Messi played in the Premier League? Zero.
Yeah.
Right. Well, glorious stuff. You heard it here first. Love Sport Radio. Brian McBride, superior footballer to Lionel Messi. Moving back to tonight's Champions League action, do you think what Liverpool showed, beyond being able to capitalise, Dom, on, as you sit, an under-par Barcelona, do you think they showed real psychological resilience? Do you think what they're showing is that mentality is as important as anything in this game?
Yeah, I think they did show that you can't never say die attitude. But like with Liverpool in the Champions League, I think you are going to get that. That competition does something different to them that no other competition can. But let's face it, they're going into a major final with Jurgen Klopp. They're going to lose.
Well, that did cross my mind because he's got a woeful record, particularly in European competition. Do you think he's going to have a sort of chip on his shoulder?
Probably not.
If he doesn't, like, it'll be a failure from him if he doesn't win the Champions League now. Because if you offered them, you know, you'll be in the Champions League final against either Ajax or Spurs.
Bite your hand off.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you'd expect them to win as well. That's the other thing. They're going to be favourites now, surely.
They have to be. I mean, you know, they're way above, you know, Spurs in the league.
Yeah.
You'd argue they're a better team than Ajax. So they would have bitten your hand off. So if they don't win this, it is bottling from themselves.
Well, stern stuff from Dom Betts. The other thing it might show is just how crucial an away goal is, particularly in the latter stages of the Champions League. If Spurs had got just one tonight, and if they hadn't been going into it with Ajax having one, it would be so, so different. Similarly, Liverpool, a 3-1 defeat. The complexion of the tie is so different. Do you think sides should be more positive when they're away from home, particularly if they're away in the first leg, and just try and nick one?
Well, yeah, I mean, firstly, I think FIFA are actually coming around to this, UEFA, that away goal might be abolished in the next few years, I think. I don't think it's a necessity as a rule. But as we've got it at the moment, yeah, I think to answer your question, yes, of course sides should be positive because it is such an advantage. You know, going away from home is not what it used to be like when the rules introduced in the 70s where, you know, you'd have to fly for 4 days to get somewhere. You know, it's like... And also, a lot more goals are being scored nowadays. Like, if you think about it, it's a bit of a disgrace that a team can't defend a 3-goal lead anymore. You know, we've had it so many times in the past few years as well. What were PSG? PSG won like 4-1 and then lost 6-0 to Barcelona. We had Barcelona win 4-1 last year and they couldn't defend a 3-goal lead.
One point is about this Barcelona situation is that obviously they've won the league pretty much at a canter this season, La Liga. Yeah. And there isn't really any challenges. So they haven't had to defend against a team of the level of the attacking prowess of Liverpool. But then they defended perfectly fine in the first leg. So I think that kind of...
I don't think they did, though, because Salah had that huge chance. Yeah, Mane had a chance in the first half. Liverpool should have scored last week.
No, yeah, no. The first leg, you know, it was an unfair scoreline on what happened, but I was perfectly happy with it.
Of course.
But for me, I think, yeah, Barcelona, I don't think they're used to those waves of attacks coming from a team of the high quality of Liverpool, but they were out without Firmino and Salah. They had Divock Origi and Jordan Shaqiri. I'm not saying, I think Alan O'Brien on that front, or not front, the James Gray show, said that he was, you know, what is it? He's no David Ngoc, but like, it is Divock Origi. I know he scored crucial goals for them.
First Champions League goals
as
well.
It is Divock Origi and Jordan Shaqiri. You got relegated with Stoke, come on. So, You know, I think Barcelona should be looking themselves in shame this
Embarrassing,
morning.
Yeah.
Do you think it was a question of arrogance? We saw the Barca official Twitter tweet, well, we only need to get one goal and we're going to get one. Do you think they're going into these second legs of massive Champions League ties where they think they've put it to bed and just thinking, well, I'm not worried about you lot?
Well, maybe not this year. Maybe you could say that about Roma last year, perhaps, because they were 4-1 up and, you know, it's only Roma. But this year, I feel like they would have known the, you know, the whole Anfield factor, as much as I hate to say it, and, you know, the fact that Liverpool are probably the best team they've played in the past year. You know, Real Madrid haven't been anywhere near it in the league in the past few years. And so this would have been the Liverpool would have been the best team they played since probably Roma last year. And there's a level of opposition up. You know, we are talking about the Champions League semi-final here. Liverpool have got the, you know, are going to get the third highest points tally in Premier League history. They're a good team, clearly. Barcelona, it's not arrogance. I think they were just undone by their own ineptitudes, the Anfield facts, so I'm using quotation marks, and just, you know, just, I guess you can call it just flat out desire and, you know, wanting it more, you know, just all the cliches. But it all came together for Liverpool and it all went wrong for Barcelona, didn't it?
Absolutely. It all needs to come together for Spurs tonight. They've just about to come to half-time at Ajax. It's still Ajax 2, Tottenham 0. Matis de Ligt and Hakim Ziyech on the score sheet. But amongst all of this Champions League excitement, all of this Liverpudlian fervour, Scott Parker has currently been doing a very, very good, very quiet job on the banks of the Thames. And coming up, is it just a matter of time before he gets appointed?
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Fulham Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and of course, Dom Betts and Guy Barlow of Fulhamish Podcast. And Scott Parker, appointed caretaker, an unglamorous choice, a man who'd been behind the scenes at the club for quite some time, is ever so quietly doing a very, very proficient job. The fans are gradually warming to him as more and more positive performances roll through. And he's even given an interview to the Daily Telegraph this week. He spoke to Jason Burt and said, "I'm the right fit for Fulham. My old school approach matches the club's identity. He seems to be a fit off the pitch. He seems to be a fit on it as well. And are we dealing, it seems, with Fulham's next permanent manager?"
I would have thought so, yeah. I think he gave a very similar interview. I haven't read that particular interview, but he gave a very similar one to Henry Winter in the Times that weekend. I got around to reading that. He spoke about his upbringing at the, you know, football academy, the FA, and, you know, the tough love approach he got back there, and how, you know, the way he was treated back then was, you know, if you lose or draw, it's not good enough. You're getting the silent treatment. You're getting hauled off. And he's talking about now how the relationship between the manager and the players is so different. You kind of have to, not mollycoddle the players, but, like, you know, you have to put an arm around them a bit more. And I think that kind of awareness is great. You know, the fact that he's had such a long career and he has learned from under good few managers, very successful managers, not Ranieri.
He learned terribly under him twice. So.
But yeah, I mean, the question here is: would we want any of the other Roman candidates? Steve Clark, no.
Well, no. You look at. It's not obviously we got a candidate, but you look at the odds. Let's say you've got. I think I saw some. You had Steve Clark. You had Neil Lennon. You had Frank Lampard, for crying out loud. You know, I'm not saying he's going to be the perfect manager to take us where we want to be next season. But if you're comparing to who the other managers are on the most likely list for a lot of bookies, then he's the best out of that list. You know, we're starting a new project. We get someone else in. If we were to get someone else in, we needed to get them in now because, you know, we can't hang about. You know, obviously the transfer window closes before the first game of the championship season, which I think probably the first weekend of August or something, like the second or the third. So I think stick with Scott Parker. He said he wants a job. The way he was describing it in his post-match Wolves interview was like, oh yeah, we need to prepare for next season, you know, pre-season, and we need to get back. You know, so he's acting like he wants to get the job. I think he was in a lot of papers, so it feels like he's been pushed quite forward PR-wise.
His agent's doing some work, isn't
he? Yeah, so I do think it is only a matter of time. I think it might happen after the Newcastle game, but as we'll get onto later, I'd quite like to know how much I'm paying my season ticket first next season. So, but yeah, I do think it is simply a matter of time before he gets appointed.
It's interesting, that PR angle, the idea that his agent's working quite hard. Are you suggesting that it's not a coincidence that he's spoken to two major papers in the same week and come out and said, look how much I get on at Fulham. Look how good an appointment I'd be. Do you think this is Scott Parker banging on the shop window, doing a dance, saying, I am the one you should pick?
Of course, yeah.
It's not even like he's implied anything. He's literally saying, I want the job.
Yeah.
Give it to me.
And I guess he wants it as soon as possible as well. Because we need to appoint someone as soon as possible from the club point of view. Like, I'd rather we need to appoint someone next week, really, don't we?
We can't have a Chelsea and appoint Mauricio Sarri like a month into pre-season.
Have Conte turn up for the first week of pre-season like Chelsea did.
You can't be doing that. And so I think, yeah, give it to him. You know, pre-season plans, I believe they're planning to go to the Algarve. And so we need to know what's happening with that.
So we can book flights.
Yeah, I need to know when I'm booking my flight from London Gatwick to Faro. It needs to happen. Long weekend in Albufeira.
Are you honestly going to go and watch your club in pre-season training?
Pre-season loads of times.
I've been to many pre-seasons.
I haven't. I worry. I'm really tempted.
What was it? Poland, Austria, Germany, Scotland, Germany. Actually, I've been to Germany, two, three times pre-season? Yeah, Poland was class.
Ended up in the drunk tank, didn't you, Dom?
Less said about that, the better. To be fair, I've actually been to where the game in Albufeira probably will be, I think.
Oh, right.
So against Villa in a training match. Kaká Nikolić scored the winner.
Brilliant. The message of this, of course, is that Dom Betts is a man with a rich and varied history with Fulham Football Club. And to be fair, Scott Parker's got a fairly varied history as well at the club. Crucially, he did play for them down in the Championship. Do you think he's going to know that level well? Do you think he's going to have that expertise? Because it's a tough league, the games come thick and fast, and there are a few managers who seem to just know how to get out of it. Steve Bruce knows, Warnock knows, and a lot of the time we hear it suggested that the reason why those guys can do that so consistently is because they know how all the other clubs in the division work. Do you think Parker's going to have that kind of nous, that kind of knowledge?
Well, maybe not yet, but again, from these interviews he's given out, he's making, you know, the right noises, as they say, that he's learning a lot and fast, and that's what he's good at. You know, he's trying to give off the impression he's like a sponge and he's going to take it all in, and he's going to take it all in a stride like he has done in his career, and he's going to take the club forward using like what he knows about the club and the identity and what he knows about the players and just the fact that it's a perfect fit for him. That's what he's saying. I guess whether that's true, only time will tell. But I think next year the Championship is going to be... it's always tough. It goes without saying. But next year particularly, I think there might be a few teams who actually have a say at the top ends. You know, you just mentioned Steve Bruce at Sheffield Wednesday. If Warnock stays at Cardiff, you'd fancy them to
You've still got Gary Rowett. You've got still got Stoke City.
Nathan Jones.
You've still got some big, big players. You've got Middlesbrough. You've got big... You know, they signed that Son Belonga for, was it 12, 13 million in the summer?
Whoever doesn't go up in the playoffs this year
think one point is, Kearney signed a new contract last week. I don't think he would have signed that if he didn't have reassurances of who'd be his manager next season.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that's got. He maybe didn't mention his injury, but I think that's definitely got a part to play in. I think these players want to play for Scott. And one more final point is that we're in a lot better place going down than we did last time. We've still got the core who got us up last season, so I think that's going to have a part to play. And I think if we can get running very quickly in the Championship next season under Scott Parker, hopefully, then it'll be a very successful season for us.
On that point, is Scott Parker your pick to be the next Fulham manager? If I had to press you individually to choose yours now, whether it was going to be Jokanović, David Wagner, Scott Parker, who are you having? Is he the right man?
It's a difficult one because, I mean, Dom said this before, that there aren't that many alternatives, but I still don't feel that Scott would be right, and I'm hoping he proves me wrong, obviously, but I feel like it's too soon for him. He's clearly just like fallen into it. You know, he's brought in as a coach last season. It's gone well for him personally. So the answer to your question is no, but I know that I can't offer any credible alternatives. So I'm just saying, if he's going to be Scott, it's going to be Scott.
A positive indictment of Scott Parker's chances at Fulham. It is still Ajax 2, Tottenham 0. Updates throughout the show. Don't go anywhere.
This is Love Sport.
London calling, Fulham calling. You're here with me, Johnny Burrow, on Love Sport Radio for your Fulham fan show. I'm delighted to be joined in the studio by Dom Betts and Guy Barlow of Fulhamish Pod. Quick update for you from the Champions League. It could be domestic football calling for Tottenham because it's currently Ajax 2, Tottenham 0. Ajax 3-0 up on the night with 3-0 up on aggregate, I should say, with an away goal to boot. Spurs need three goals in the second half. Can they take a leaf out of Liverpool's book? One thing that Pochettino has been praised for significantly is bringing young talent through. He's given a few homegrown talent chance, the likes of Oliver Skipp, Kyle Walker-Peters. He obviously brought Dele Alli into the club. And Fulham are a club with a rich history of doing this themselves.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, this is in reference to Harvey Elliott.
Yeah, well, because obviously he became his youngest ever Premier League player to make an appearance, taking him from a Fulham legend, Matthew Briggs.
Matty Briggs.
But he actually made his debut, was it the Millwall away game, when he was only 15 at the time, yeah. Which is just ludicrous. Like, you should be going to maths the next day. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, I saw someone mug him off on Twitter saying he looks like he's got about three different haircuts.
His haircut...
Aren't they all awful? We're dealing with sort of ponytail, man bun or mohawk.
Yeah.
Sort of comically bad, like David Beckham circa 2002. Yeah.
I thought about making this section instead of looking at some of Fulham's youth players throughout the years. Who are Fulham's worst haircuts? I mean, there's plenty there.
Well, so. Harvey Elliott is vying for both titles, isn't he? Well, he's got one. He's going for the other as well.
So how good is this kid? Let's cut to the chase. We've heard a lot about him. He was played in the League Cup against City, amongst others. How far can he go?
I don't really know. Like, we haven't seen enough of him. It's not... I think it helped with Sessegnon, but like half the Fulham supporter base know Sessegnon's brother. Half of them know Chris. But
know him personally, you mean?
Yeah, a lot. He grew up in Fulham, so a lot of people get to know him just through school and stuff like that. But you know, with Harvey Elliott, from what I've seen, he looks okay. He looks like a tricky white.
He doesn't look okay. The haircut's
Yeah.
When he's on the ball, he seems to attack. But I don't know. Like, I haven't really seen enough. He looks okay at Millwall. You know, you didn't really see much of him at Wolves.
Did he get a touch?
I think he got one, maybe two.
Is this another factor that counts in Scott Parker's favour, though? That he's gone, all right, we're already relegated. How can I find silver linings here? I'll give the kids a chance. He's willing to recognise that quality and let them do it on the pitch.
I think, yeah, but the thing is, he's not, I don't know, because like, I don't know if he's played hard because he generally wants him as part of the squad. Because I'm surprised that Stephen Sessegnon hasn't come in, because Cyrus Christie just is Cyrus Christie. And so, I don't know, maybe it isn't, but McGaff did the same thing playing the likes of Dembele and Pat Roberts when we went down last time, so who knows. But yeah, I thought I would collate, though, just a list of some of the young players that have played for Fulham. It's not the, like, 10 youngest or anything
like
that.
It's a fantastic list, actually.
But I thought I'd pick a few to sort of discuss their careers. Obviously, we spoke about Matthew Briggs. So he made his Fulham appearance, I think it was the last game of the season, in 06-07, away at Borough. I think it was Laurie Sanchez who gave him his debut.
Oh yeah, that was when like we thought we were gonna have to go away to Middlesbrough and win, because we had Liverpool penultimate game, Dempsey winner, and we thought we were gonna have to go away to Borough and win to stay up. So obviously it sold out, and then it was like a boring 0-0, wasn't it?
It was a bit like the Sheffield Wednesday game when we got the playoffs in the first time. And
yeah,
it was like, oh, there's literally nothing on this game.
It was impossible to get a ticket for that Borough game.
Yeah,
but we stayed.
But yeah, so the thing is, you know, there's a couple of games. No, there's one game that probably sticks out of my mind of Matty Briggs. I think it was in the League Cup. I think maybe probably like second round. We played Port Vale at home. I think we battered them like 6-0 or something ridiculous like that. And Matty Briggs just made this ridiculous bombing run down the left-hand side in the first half. Or in the second half, it was when we were attacking the Hammersmith end. And I was sitting in a Riverside stand, I think, that day. And I was like, oh my God, this guy's unreal. It's gonna be world class.
I don't know. I must have only seen him play for us a handful of times. He's down as playing for us here from 2007 to 2014. Playing 13 times in the league, according to this Wikipedia entry.
Yeah.
Which is pretty hilarious.
Four big loan spells at Orient, Peterborough, Bristol City and Watford, accumulating less than 20 games between the four of them.
He scored one goal at Watford, mate.
World class. One in every seven games. Great for a fullback.
So one guy you mentioned when Felix Magath was in charge, who did feature at the end of that last relegation season, was Patrick Roberts.
Snake.
He came on. He was a left-footed right winger, twinkle-toed, electrifying pace, looked really, really exciting. Of course, did leave the club for Manchester City shortly afterwards. Where has it all gone wrong? He's still playing. He's on loan at Girona at the moment, but he's still young. He is still young, but he isn't looking like the England star that we thought he might be.
He's not playing for Maldon and Tiptree like Matthew Briggs is. You know, he's still a Man City player. What is he like 22, 23?
Yeah, like, so, yeah. He's in the year below me at school, so he would be 21, 22.
From what I've seen at Girona as well, like, or from the occasional sweep I've had of his name on Twitter, Girona fans actually like him, and he's been unlucky with injury this year. I think obviously Celtic fans love him as well. They'd have him back. Well, yeah, he's building a tidy career.
What was really odd? I can't remember where I was going. I was getting the train to somewhere. I got the train, and he was on my train because he actually is where his family home is, actually really close to where I live. And then I was like, oh, I've just Pat Roberts is on my train. My mates were like, I thought it was snakes on a plane, not snakes on a train. But no, Pat Roberts, you know, I was annoyed when we sold him. I thought he could have done more, but obviously he wasn't getting actually that much opportunity, really.
No, he wasn't. In the team, Kit in the championship. Kit wasn't playing him.
Kit wasn't playing him, but was playing Sean Kavanagh, left centre mid in a midfield diamond.
Why do you think he didn't get a chance?
Well, I don't know. He was small, and he got bullied off the ball a lot in the championship. That's literally the only reason why I think Kit
weren't playing a system that suited the way suited
Kit's,
him.
Kit's diamonds
in Slavisa in the way Slavisa played. if you had Pat Roberts in that team, I think he would have perfectly suited it.
Do you think? In what position? Just like coming in off the left.
Coming off the left.
Or the right or left
on the opposite side of Sessegnon with Mitrovic up top. I don't, that right wing problem was always an issue for us. So I don't see why. I think he would have fitted in perfectly.
Just a quick Champions League update for you. For Spurs, Fernando Llorente has been brought on for Wanyama. Pochettino is going for it. But as for Ajax, their fans are belting out a version of Bob Marley's Don't Worry, Be Happy. Simply brutal towards the Spurs fans. Updates from that game as we get them. Who else stands out as a real youth talent for Fulham?
Kieran Fry is an odd one. Right,
because good player. I really liked him.
He was only ever good against Chelsea.
Yes.
Every time we played Chelsea, he was unreal. Another game I remember was when he came on against Arsenal, I think, and his job was literally to get Johan Juru sent off. He was on a yellow card, I think, and I think Marcin Jol brought him on, and he just told him to run at Johan Juru, and he just got Johan Juru's second yellow card, and he got sent off. But Kieran Fry, I always thought he was quite a good player.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you mentioned that Chelsea game. He destroyed Ivanovic at right back. That ruined his career. Yeah, yeah. Where is he now? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, he did score the win in a Europa League final a few years later.
But yeah, I don't know. I'm looking at his career now. His first. I remember him when he went back to Birmingham. He's currently on loan at Maccabi Haifa from Başakşehir in Istanbul. I don't know. Like again, he's probably still quite young, building a career for himself. I don't think, compared to the other players on this list, he's fallen off the face of the earth. You know,
no.
There was still some talent there.
Yeah, Elliot Omazusi. The only thing I remember from him was he got onto Showboat and Soccer M because I think we played Chelsea at home, and I think it was maybe 07-08 or what, maybe something like that. And he just did a roulette in his own half.
Really?
I was like, mate, you're right back. What are you doing?
I remember him because he's like 1 or 2 years after Liam Rosenior. And he was like another academy product. He played right back, and we thought, here we go.
Liam Rosenior part two.
Liam Rosenior part two. And he's done time.
Yeah, and he did get in trouble with the police fairly often. That's probably why the club got rid of him.
Perverting the course of justice, I believe.
Yeah, Cameron Burgess, another one. You know, his legendary debut for Fulham, the centre back Cameron Burgess playing holding midfield.
Away at Ipswich on our first game back in the Championship.
That was odd.
He currently played 15 times according for Scunthorpe and is still a member of their side, apparently.
Apparently, yeah. And
18 years now.
He's also very
days.
Weird because he started off in the youth teams for Scotland because I think he's from Aberdeen, and then he somehow just made his way into the Australian under 23s.
Oh, yes. I've seen that.
He's a very, very odd man. And then one, you got Muamer Tankovic, legendary false nine away at United in that 2-2. Famously for the 83 Brilliant. Crosses from Man United.
Yeah, something like that. All 90% were headed away by Dan Byrne. Signed for AZ Alkmaar.
I was quite annoyed when we sold him.
Really?
I thought, you know, he could be a false nine in the Championship.
Apparently played 3 times for us. I only remember that Man U game. I don't remember.
I think he might have come on as a substitute in the last game of the season when we drew 2-2 with Palace, when David scored that screamer in the last minute.
And finally, honourable mentions for Darren Pratley. He's had a solid career. Look at that.
He's had a solid football league career. They love Tom Duggan. Swansea.
Yeah. Who else we miss? Moussa Dembélé. And that's it. Yeah.
Yeah, Tom Donaghan doesn't need a mention.
I don't remember him. Who is Tom Donaghan?
Who is he indeed? A quick Champions League update for you. Spurs still 2-0 down to Ajax in Amsterdam on the night. 3-0 down on aggregate. Tottenham now need 3 goals in this second half, but they've only scored once in the 5.5 games since their famous win against Manchester City in the Champions League. It's not looking good for Spurs, but we will have updates for you throughout the show.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Fulham Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio with me, Johnny Burrow, and Dom Betts and Guy Barlow of Fulhamish. And it's that time of the year where, as fans, our clubs ask us to shell out once more and renew our season tickets. Sometimes it's a certainty. You think, I've watched fantastic football all year for cheap prices. Why would I not want to turn up at the ground for another season? Sometimes the football hasn't been perfect, the tickets haven't been cheap, and we start questioning things. So first up, what's the current state of play with season tickets for next year in the Championship?
Well, no one knows.
Who knows?
The club hasn't said anything about it. They've not even hinted at anything.
Well, actually, they did that weird little thing today, which is like Fulham till I die.
They've been doing
which is like a little social media post, which I think must be hinting at season tickets.
They've been doing it all week. So maybe they're doing it soon. But I mean, the last home game of the season is on, you know, Sunday. And, you know, we've usually been quite good at getting our season tickets, because it's usually, if you get yours in the early bird deal, you'll get it at the cheapest price possible.
Yeah.
Which is usually, like, by the beginning of May or end of April.
I think what they're going to do is they're going to freeze it. But the difficulty here is just the Riverside people, you know.
Well, yeah, my dad and his sister sit in the Riverside, and they're like, well, we don't know where we're going. My dad was like, I don't want to sit in the Putney end.
Yeah,
he was like, I'm going to try my best to hopefully get in the Johnny Haynes stand. Because it's like, you've got, and I think the Riverside is one, it's probably up there without the four stands with the highest percentage of scene to get holders to seats.
That's probably right, yeah. It's going to be weird for the next 2 years without playing three stands as it is. And obviously they've got to accommodate all the season ticket holders in the Riverside end. I think I remember seeing that as a percentage, Fulham have got one of the lowest, ground percentage of the ground taken up by season ticket holders. If, for example, if you look at Norwich, it's like 21,000 out of 25,000 are season ticket holders. But if you look at us, I think it's what, like maybe 15 out of 25, or I think 11,000 to 15 is what I've seen.
I think it'll be 11 to 15.
Yeah, but like, which is quite a low percentage.
But
anyway,
you still got to find seats for everyone who's got a season ticket in the Riverside and he wants to renew.
Which is, I mean, and they're leaving it so late, it's going to be amazing if they actually do find. Like, I'd be amazed if we have the same level or higher season ticket renewals next year. We're obviously not going to, and they're not helping themselves by leaving it so late.
There's a broader point here as well, isn't there, as in the sense that you're moving a division. This isn't a usual season ticket renewal where you're going to be playing the same teams at the same level. At this season, we've had, oh my lord above, it's not going well for Tottenham. Gentlemen, who do you... it is going well for Tottenham. The goal has gone in for the right team. It's Spurs have got that away goal. Lucas Moura has got one in the 55th minute. Is the dream alive? They need two more. They've got 35 minutes to play. We'll bring you updates throughout the show. Do you think that they can do it now? We said previously, dead and buried. Now they need two. Can it happen?
Brown bread.
Still.
I just think Ajax are too good for them.
Do you think there might not be a question of mental strength for Ajax? If they've watched Liverpool do it yesterday, they'll have had absolute belief in themselves prior to this goal going in. But now, do you think they might think, well, hang on a minute, if Barcelona can capitulate, why can't we?
Yeah, I think Barcelona capitulated because it's seen what Barcelona seemed to do in the Champions League. Now, I think Ajax are fearless in the way they play, and I don't think this is going to affect their mindset. I think they'll still go through tonight. I said it at the start of the show. And I think, yes, Spurs got them back, so it's just going to push Ajax on more, so we just want to completely bury the game with one more. And I do think with the fearlessness of this Ajax team, I don't think that last night will affect their mindset.
Yeah, and Spurs are running on fumes, aren't they? Like, I'm amazed they've scored. We've got depleted squads, most of which have been injured at some point in the season. Yeah, I'd be amazed if they come back from this.
A tough ask, but still possible. If Liverpool can do it, Spurs surely can too. We'll bring you updates throughout the show. How much are you guys, in terms of your Fulham season ticket, how much less are you expecting to pay
next season? But you say they might freeze it because they've not got a stand, so they're going to need to make up the money. But what price are they freezing?
Yeah.
Are they freezing the early bird price that me and you would have paid last season? Are they freezing at the post-playoff final season ticket price, which means then me and you would be paying an increase on what we paid last season?
That would be ridiculous. Just quickly, what they did last time we got relegated is they said they froze it and they said either you get 19 Premier League games or 23 Championship home games, which I think was probably the right thing to do at the time. And I think they might just stick to what they know and do the same thing at the early bird prices.
Yeah, they can't increase on the early bird price because then you do have a high percentage of fans who then will be playing more. I can see the club doing something different because we don't have the Riverside.
Sorry, I mean, I'm out of the loop here because I'm not a Fulham season ticket owner and I may be missing something, but it seems to me, I know you play more games at Championship level, but if I'm a fan of a football club and I've spent hundreds, if not thousands of pounds to watch my team for an entire year, and for most of that year, prior to the confirmation of that relegation, I've watched them get battered. At the point where you come to me as the owner of the club and you say, well, we've been relegated, we're playing our football at a lower level, please renew your season ticket, I'm expecting a serious price cut.
Cut? I'm not sure. I don't know.
Why not? You're going from watching Lionel Messi.
But you're getting more games. Like, you're getting four more games, aren't you?
Four more games to go from Eden Hazard to Patrick Bamford.
Boy, Patrick Bamford's a good player. No joke.
Gentlemen, I don't mean to alarm you, but we could have a second spectacular Champions League comeback in as many days. Lucas Moura, he scored in the 55th. He scored again in the 59th. He's doing his best Genie Wijnaldum impression. It's now Ajax 3, Spurs 2. Just a moment ago, we were suggesting that Ajax could perhaps have a bit of a wobble. They clearly haven't reacted properly after conceding that first, and now Spurs need one goal. They've got at least 32 minutes in which to get it. What are you saying now?
I still think I've got this in the bag, man.
Yes,
confident. Yeah. It's interesting because you're saying the same words, but you're saying them in a slightly different way. There's a wobble in the voice of Don Betts.
I don't know what you're talking about, mate.
Barlow is anxiously scratching his face, just thinking, hang on a minute, they were dead and buried. Why are they up? Why are they walking around?
Yeah, but I mean, you're saying that, but I don't actually mind either way.
No.
I said, I'm happy this is a good game of football.
Do we think that the fact that both English clubs, whether or not Spurs do pull this off, we'll bring you updates. It's going to be quite extraordinary if they do. But do you think that both English clubs have at the very least given a very good go at coming back from insurmountable odds? Is the Premier League harder? Is there something about the adversity you face playing against big, loud crowds against grueling defences every week that leaves you better equipped at the Champions League level?
I don't think it's relevant to this game because I'd say Ajax have a better atmosphere than pretty much every team in the Premier League.
Yeah, but that's for them, right? But if you think these Ajax players, in terms of a home support, they're not going to be as used to Spurs fans coming away and making a racket as Excelsior.
I mean, if you're looking at a team like Fulham, you're looking at a team at PSV, I'd argue they're pretty raucous away support. So I don't think it's really relevant for the Eredivisie sides. But I think if you're looking at La Liga, you don't really have an away fan culture.
The Huesca Ultras.
Yeah, the Huesca Ultras or the Eibar Ultras or, you know, Getafe are doing so well this season. But I don't think you can say that with Ajax. I think you definitely can with Barcelona. And I think the English teams are doing credit for the league, but I think, you know, we've got two or three good teams, the rest are quite mediocre.
Yeah, but you say that, but then obviously there's half an hour to go in this Ajax Spurs game, but it could be four English teams in the cross Champions League and Europa League finals, which would be pretty weird, really, wouldn't it? If you had Arsenal Chelsea one final, Liverpool Spurs in the other.
And that can't be a coincidence.
No, you're right. But Arsenal and Chelsea are pretty far off the top of the Premier League.
Mm.
If you look at Chelsea's run to the final in the knockout stages, who they played?
They played absolute pub
teams.
Who
they played? Was it Maribor?
Absolute pub teams.
Prague, MOL Vidi.
Yeah, they played Vidi, they've played Frankfurt, who are a good side. Don't get me wrong, Frankfurt are a good team.
Yeah, but it's a semi-final. You expect to be playing.
If you think about who we played in Europa League, we played Juventus, we played Shakhtar, who were the holders, we played Wolfsburg, who were the German champions. We had played Hamburg, who were hosting it. You know, it is a very easy run to the final, but yeah, I think English football has been shown to be it's definitely back where it used to be in the mid-2000s.
Yeah, 10 years ago, they were dominating it all, and now in 2019, they're doing the same. There was a VAR check, by the way, on that second Lucas Moura goal, and the goal stood. It stands. It's Ajax 2, Spurs 2 on the night. It's Ajax 3, Spurs 2, but should Spurs get one more goal, they will win on away goals. It would really be something. Would it be a better comeback than Liverpool's at Anfield last night? Arguably, to do it away from home is even more staggering. Updates for you throughout the show. But coming up, I think we need to reminisce. We've talked a lot about the future, but the future's going down. The past is staying up. Let's have a chat about that glorious 2007-2008 season.
This is Love Sport.
It's the Fulham Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and Dom Bett and Guy Barlow of Fulhamish. It's still Ajax 2, Spurs 2. Ajax 3-2 up on aggregate. One more Spurs goal would be enough to send them through on away goals and complete a quite remarkable comeback, reminiscent of the one that Liverpool pulled off against Barcelona at Anfield last night. Of course, for both of those clubs, the real aim for this season, for it to be glorious, is to win silverware. Liverpool still in that title race, both sides with their eyes firmly on the Champions League as well. But arguably, Fulham's greatest moment wasn't winning a title. And don't get me wrong, there have been many a title in the club's history. But it was maintaining Premier League status. It was that glorious 2007-2008 season where you looked dead and buried and you came back just like Liverpool, just like Spurs, from the brink. What was it like?
Yeah, it was incredible. I think Dom and I are obviously a similar age, and up until that time, Fulham had been on the up, you know. We'd got successive promotions. We'd been in the Premier League for 7 or 8 years. I hadn't known anything different. This is like the first kind of hardship I'd experienced as a Fulham fan. And in the end, it wasn't even hardship because we stayed up. But, I mean, it was an incredible escape. If you look at it statistically, it does rank as one of the better ones in terms of the points deficit overturns and things like that, and the fact that we won 4 of our last 5 games. I mean, when we think of when you actually say great escape to me, I do think of those 4 wins in the last 5 games. I think of it starting away. Who was it? We lost at home to Sunderland, and then we won the last 3 games.
Yeah,
away at Man City, Birmingham at home,
away at Reading,
away at Reading,
and
yeah,
then away to Pompey. I the first time I sort of I've started back to, obviously it wasn't, we didn't go on a run here, but it was the win over Villa in February.
Yeah,
when Bullard scored, was it the last minute free kick? I think Aaron Hughes scored an own goal against his former team. And I think that spurred on, because that might have been Hodgson's first win at the club, actually.
Yeah.
Because it was the beginning of February. And then obviously we didn't get any points for the next 4 games. But then we beat Everton at home 1-0. You know, we thought, okay, maybe something's on here. But then we lost to Newcastle away. Nothing new there. and then that derby 2-2. That Derby 2-2 and a Sunderland 3-1.
Derby, of course, the worst Premier League team in Premier League history, yeah, officially.
Yes.
Who's their striker? Villa?
Emmanuel Villa.
Yeah, he scored twice in that game.
I mean, because they had Fulham legend Dean Leacock at the back.
Of course they did. Roy Carroll.
Obviously, and then we lost to Sunderland 3-1. But then there was that game in mid-April away to Reading. And, well, that I think that is when everyone was... That sort of spurred up, because it was our first away win in the season.
Yeah. I think that, just quickly on that Sunderland game, that was like, you talk about, it was up and up for me as a Fulham fan, but that Sunderland game was a real low point. That was like, man, we're going down. Like, we were 3-0 down and we lost 3-1 at the end because David Healy put one in top bins at the last minute to, you know, save a bit of blushes. But that was a proper low moment coming away from that game, losing at home to Sunderland as well. And then we did go on to Reading.
Obviously, yeah. Brian McBride opened the scoring after 24 minutes. And, yeah, you know, that we were like, okay, we're like, yes, we're in the lead. We're winning away from home against a relegation rival. We have to keep this on. And it was so nervous for the rest of the game.
Yeah.
The next 75 minutes until Eric Nevlin in the last minute secured the game for us. And I think, you know, I think Eric Nevlin sort of gets forgotten about a lot in the Great Escape and into our Europa League run, because he scored so many crucial goals for us. You know, he started off by getting that 2-0 against Reading. Obviously, we then lost 2-0 after that to Liverpool. But then the next game away to Man City is where the story really starts. I mean, you know, we're 2-0 down at half time. I think this was it my 12th birthday exactly, this game.
They did it for you, Dom.
Yeah,
yeah, we're 2-0 down at half time. We're mathematically relegated if the game finishes like this. And I think what all the players have said is what Hodgson said. He was like, just go out there and perform.
Yeah, I mean, it was a weird kind of Man City team as well, managed by Sven, Joe Hart in goal.
Elano.
Yeah, Elano.
That works.
Stephen Ireland's curled in absolute beauty in the first half. But yeah, whatever Roy said worked, didn't it?
Do you think it would have been a hairdryer? Because we don't think of Roy Hodgson as being a man to give a hairdryer, but surely that is a point for a hairdryer.
I don't think so, because the writing was just... It was... We were relegated. Like,
exactly. Yeah. So you try and galvanise, right?
But, I don't know. You have to ask Roy why he didn't give him the hairdryer, but I think there's a time and a place for it. And it's not like we were, you know, losing at home to a rubbish team. We were losing away and we had to do something. It wasn't about, you know... There was no point dwelling on the rubbish first half. There was a point where now we know exactly what we have to do. And what we had to do was score 3 goals and win the game. And we did it.
And it's not like it happened straight after the first half started. We didn't score our first goal until 20 minutes before the end of the game.
Yeah.
When Dimitri Kamara got his first goal. And then 10 minutes later, Murphy's, you know, the Murphy pen happened. And then the last minute, Kamara. It was a crazy game. And, you know, it was... Even then... I'm not sure everyone was like, something's happening here.
Yeah.
But not that, oh, we're going to stay up now.
No,
this just was the catalyst for the rest of the season. And, you know, this will always be remembered in this season. I think this arguably gets remembered more than the actual Portsmouth game. Just
because
what a ridiculous comeback it was. And then we moved on into our last two games of the season with Birmingham City at home and Pompey away, starting off that Birmingham City at home game. And, you know, I think the celebrations in this game, again, it was McBride to open the scoring and then a late sort of 2-0 from Eric Neveland. And, you know, that 2-0 from Eric Neveland, I don't think I've seen many celebrations bigger in the league at Craven Cottage.
Yeah, and kind of that, for me anyway, iconic Gentleman Jim commentary when Neveland goes through and he's like, go on, do it again like you did at Reading. And he put it away. That was brilliant. I remember just jumping back a step very quickly, coming after the Liverpool game, we lost 2-0. And... I was speaking to someone and they said, if we win our last three games, we stay up. So we beat Man City, we did that. Birmingham at home, you know, it's beautiful, sunny day, proper build-up. It was one of the probably to that point, our biggest game in the Premier League.
Were you confident going into those last two games?
Because, I was confident in the Birmingham game,
because the City turnaround was extraordinary. And Portsmouth were a decent side, but Birmingham City and Portsmouth, if you could have picked two teams, that's a fairly generous run-in.
Yeah, exactly. I wasn't confident ahead of the Man City game. And, you know... That was kind of justified because we were 2-0 down at half time and only through a miraculous comeback did we do it. But the Birmingham game, I was confident we were at home. We were always been traditionally good at home in the Premier League. And the Portsmouth, they were on the beach because they had the FA Cup final coming up.
Yeah, the Birmingham game, again, obviously, as I said, in the league, I've not seen many celebrations bigger than this. Obviously, like up until then, I didn't have many. And then, you know, this is the first time we were at the bottom three since December. And then, so this was now in our hands. We didn't have to rely on anyone else. We just had to win away at Portsmouth on the final day. And, you know, going to Fratton Park, it was so hot.
I didn't actually go to the game. I was on the train back from Wrexham visiting family.
Lovely.
And I got a phone call from my dad.
That day at Fratton Park was so hot, such a hot day. But, you know, we eventually got the winner through a very unlucky source. You know, as you said, Pompey did have the FA Cup final in the summer. It got to, what was it, you know, but Murphy scored 15 minutes from time and, you know, Bullard has a free kick. And the last person you expect to pop up at the back post with a header to keep you up is Danny Murphy.
I completely unmarked as well.
Completely unmarked. And, you know, what day it was and then what followed the Great Escape. It's just absolutely incredible. But it was a start of something and in the next season, we just built on it. And the Great Escape will be some of the greatest memories in a lot of Fulham fans' lifetime of our ages, but in loads of Fulham fans' lifetime. You know, it was the first time we really were struggling to stay up in the Premier League since we got up there. And it was absolutely great. And even, obviously, we have been to a European final, but even that goal from Danny Murphy is still one of the greatest moments of being a Fulham fan in my lifetime anyway.
An iconic period for Fulham fans, and if Spurs can do it tonight, if they can pull this comeback off, it will be the greatest moment for the vast majority of living Tottenham fans that they've seen their team produce. Just a quarter an hour ago, Ajax fans were patronisingly singing Don't Worry, Be Happy by Bob Marley. They're not so lively now. It's Ajax 2, Spurs 2. Ajax 3-2 up on aggregate, but one more Spurs goal would see them go through on away goals. Spurs have had 74% possession since the start of the second half. And listen, Ajax are yet to lose a Champions League game when they've taken the lead in their history. They've won 45, they've drawn 10. But could Spurs be about to change that?
This is...
You're listening to the Fulham Fan Show here on Love Sport Radio. You're with me, Johnny Burrow, and Dom Betts and Guy Barlow of Fulhamish. Quick Champions League update for you. It's still Ajax 2, Tottenham 2. Ajax 3-2 up on aggregate, but one more Spurs goal sends them through on away goals. What a story that would be. What a comeback. Liverpool, eat your hearts out. But it's that time of the show where we focus our attention on Fulham's next opponent, and coming up, it's their last opponent, of course, in this Premier League era for the club. It's Newcastle, and I'm delighted to say we're joined on the line by Aaron Stokes, who is a sports journalist for the Daily Star and, of course, a massive Toon fan. Good evening, Aaron. Thanks ever so much for joining us. Firstly, where has Eozi Perez's form come from? He's gone from average forward to clinical centre forward overnight.
Yeah, I think a lot of Newcastle fans have been wondering where this Eozi Perez has been for about 4 or 5 years now. He's just seemed, with the last 6 months, just been playing out of his skin. And I think we're not really sure where it's came from, whether it's the signing of Almiron or just maybe the Benitez factor. But yeah, he's playing fantastic at the minute, and long may it last.
Yeah, obviously, you know, this game was obviously labelled possibly as a relegation six-pointer a fair few months ago. Obviously, that's definitely not happening now. I mean, what have Newcastle fans made of their season this season, considering, you know, the sort of constraints that Rafa Benitez and the team are under?
It's felt like pretty much exactly the same season as last season. I think it's quite spooky when you look at sort of the two seasons side to side. They're very, very similar in terms of points and wins. So, yeah, it's just been pretty much just the... same old, really. A slow start, probably due to the fixtures and maybe the squad not gelling together. But then after Christmas, just like as the boys did last season, it's just been, you know, a massive improvement, which has sort of seen us now obviously well clear of the relegation zone. But yeah, it just seems to be every sort of Christmas time to February, Newcastle find this sort of amazing run of form, which sort of pulls them out of any danger, which has been the case again this season.
On Sunday, looking ahead to that, I mean, Fulham have actually got kind of a weirdly good record against Newcastle in the past few years. You know, I remember in our last relegation season, we beat you. Roddy Eger pops up with a winner, I think. What do you make of this fixture in general? Like, do you have any memories of it at all?
I think, well, my most recent memory of it really is actually the Championship game. When Newcastle sort of went into the Championship thinking that they were going to steamroll it, and on the first night of the season, I think it was Matt Smith popping up with a header for Fulham to win it. So yeah, like you say, Newcastle haven't always found it very easy against Fulham. They haven't really found it easy in London in general, to be fair. I know I've been to quite a few games, you know, since I've been in the capital, and I've still yet to see them win. So yeah, there's just something that doesn't really sit right when Newcastle come down here. They just never seem to be able to perform. And Fulham just seems to be one of those weird sort of bogey teams for them.
Yeah, I mean, so if we look back at a reverse fixture, a very dull and boring 0-0, I don't really remember many, many chances apart from when Abubakar Kamara did the most Abubakar Kamara thing I've ever seen, steam through defence, round the goalkeeper and still somehow not to get a shot on target. But it was actually our first clean sheet of the season, I think it was just for Christmas that was. And obviously how we were both sort of fighting relegation at the time. And I think this fixture, you know, I think for both teams, it's not a must win in that sense, but both teams obviously want to end the season on a high. Obviously, there's nothing to actually play for in the game. But, you know, for us, we've won three of our last four, three clean sheets in the last four games. And obviously for you, it'd be good just to, you know, where mid-table is, and 3 points will get you higher up in the table. So I think, you like Fulham fans expecting, you're expecting a good game on a Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, I know obviously in terms of, you know, what happens in the Premier League, it's obviously a bit of a dead rubber. But like you say, Fulham are going to want to end the season on a high. You know, they've been in good form recently, sort of three or four wins in the last couple of weeks. So they'll be wanting to finish it, you know, with a flourish. And I mean, you saw on Saturday night, Benitez, even though Newcastle are obviously well safe and probably going to finish 13th, Benitez isn't going to send his team out and demand anything less than a win. So I think it'll be a good game. I think both teams will still go to win it. And yeah, I mean, Fulham are obviously going to be one of the sort of cut off what's been quite a disappointing season with a sort of a good win at home.
Aaron, Newcastle finally broke their transfer record this season with the addition of Miguel Almiron. A few people raised eyebrows because he was coming from the MLS, which I think certain English fans are still slightly sniffy about, if we're honest. But he's looked fairly lively, hasn't he? What have you made of his form since his arrival in Newcastle?
Yeah, he has looked lively. And the thing with Almiron is that he's a player that Newcastle haven't seen the sort of like of since Hatton Ben Arfa's left the club. Now, that is a player who can pick the ball up, run at defenders, really get fans off their seats. So I think Newcastle fans are just hoping that he has a strong pre-season and then he's raring to go for sort of his first full season next year. But like you say, he's looked lively. I remember the games against Huddersfield and Burnley was particularly good. And yeah, so he's sort of already justifying that price tag. I mean, I know obviously 20 million doesn't sound very much in this day and age, but for Newcastle to be spending it, it was quite a big deal. So, yeah, I mean, like I say, he's obviously injured, now till probably midway through the summer, but fans are excited to really see what he can do next season. And if you're asking me, I think he's going to be a hit because he looks like a very sort of very tidy player.
So you've got Almiron, you've got Perez as well. I mean, so Rondon is the third part of that front three, which I actually think is a very decent Premier League front three. But, I mean, the big question is, Rondon, the $16 million rather, is it buyout clause, I think. Do you assume that's going to be taken up?
If you'd asked me a couple of weeks ago, I think I would have said yeah. Now, I think it's looking more like he's probably going to head back to West Brom. There's been sort of whispers this week that he's getting ready to say his goodbyes on Sunday, which is going to be a shame because he's been such a vital player this season, and Newcastle fans love nothing more than getting behind like a big sort of solid number nine. Obviously, we all sort of thought Mitrovic was going to be that player, and it didn't sort of work out that way. So I personally think he's not going to stay, which is a massive shame. But for Newcastle United to be paying $16 million for a 29-year-old, it's not going to happen very often. So I don't think fans are going to be too shocked if he does go. But I think it's looking that way that, unfortunately, he's going to be heading back to West Brom for next season.
Aaron, you will, of course, have him and Perez to take on Fulham. How do you see it going? A score prediction, please.
Oh, I mean, I am probably the most optimistic Newcastle fan in the world, so I'm going to say...
You're the only optimistic Newcastle fan in the world, aren't you, Aaron?
Yeah, that is true. At some parts of the season, it's looked very bleak, but I've always kept the faith. I'll go 2-1. I think we'll nick it late on. Rondon, a nice little send-off goal from.
Wonderful. Well, thank you ever so much for that, Aaron. Lovely to speak to you. Aaron Stokes there of the Daily Star and also a Newcastle fan. It is all kicking off in the Champions League, gents, quite frankly. Pochettino is going for broke, as he has to at this point in the game. It's still Ajax 2, Tottenham 2 on the night. Ajax have hit the post, but they're still tied. Ajax, of course, 3-2 up on aggregate. Pochettino knows that one more away goal for his side would send them through. It's been described by our producer as a pure slugfest, and with good reason. Both of these teams are playing like they're desperate for a goal in the 95th minute rather than battling it out in the 83rd. Updates for you throughout the show, but if Spurs can nick one, it really will be quite amazing.
This is Love Sport.
It's Johnny Burrow here on Love Sport Radio for your Fulham fan show, joined, of course, by Dom Betts and Guy Barlow of the Fulhamish podcast. It's still Ajax 2, Tottenham 2. Could we see a dramatic late winner for Spurs? It would be something. We will be bringing you updates throughout the game. 5 minutes of normal time left to play. There will, of course, be stoppages as well. And we're able to bring you the delightful news that a certain Ryan Bubble has won an unorthodox award.
Yeah, he won the WeAreBrighton.com Player of the Month for April.
For Brighton?
Yeah. Yeah, obviously that's the point, yeah. with 82% of the vote, which is their most convincing winner of the season. All thanks to that absolute screamer against Cardiff. Where was that goal of the season vote resolved? Is that still happening?
It can't happen because it's possibly under Sherlock.
Yeah, but Babel's going to win it. Because no one was going to vote for Schürrle.
Yeah, that is correct.
So I think we should have it. But do we know if it's happening or not? We don't know, do we?
Yeah, well, the club don't want seem to want to announce anything at the moment. So no.
Well, they announced Kearney's contract on Friday last week. Come on.
That was a good piece of news. Were you surprised by that? Or because his family settled, were you expecting him to stick
around? I don't think
around?
He needed to sign it. He's been at the club, 4 or 5 years, and he signed 3 contracts?
Yeah.
That's ludicrous.
It's like Messi.
Are we hearing reports of a significant pay rise?
Almost certainly. Or rather, he was going to lose a lot of money in the pay cut if the relegation clause.
Right.
And now he's probably just maintaining.
I'm happy that he's going to be at the team in the championship next season. You know, one down, two more to go. Mitrovic and Sessegnon, which I don't see them happening. But you know, I think that, you know, it's good news. So our captain still, our cup captain staying at the club. You know, I couldn't see him moving. He's just had his first baby, and I couldn't see. He seems very settled in London. He's very happy at the club. You know, he mentioned that he possibly wants to finish his career at the club, which means he'd be here for another 6-7 years.
Yeah,
and I think, you know, it's good to see that we got keep going that core to attack the championship next season, and it was great to see. But it's all about Babel winning Brighton Player of the Month.
That is true. I mean, I've been banging on about this as a joke about 3 months ago. Babel Player of the Season. Babel Player of the Season.
For Fulham?
Yeah. Every game.
For Brighton, perhaps?
Well, he's already won Player of the Month. Let's not get greedy here. You know what I mean? But it started out as a joke. I can't remember who he scored against early on. Maybe at the West Ham game when we lost. And when he opened the scoring there, I was like, Player of the Season. He's playing well. Player of the Season. And it's been building momentum. And now... I'm not going to say I've got a following because people think independently, but I think that is a train that a few people are on, and I'm happy to board it. You know, Player of the Season, why not? The little
the only people I can see rivaling him is possibly Callum Chambers.
Can't give it to a lone player.
Yeah, Alex Mitrovic, he scores goals. I don't know Sergio Rico, but he's not supported by the fan base enough, but. There's no reason why Babel can't be win player of the season. Why not?
Spurs have just had a shot cleared off the line. It's all getting very, very tense in Amsterdam. Can they do it? They've got about 5 minutes left to play if we include stoppages. A goal would be extraordinary. Liverpool did it. Can Spurs do it as well? Updates before the end of the show could be quite something. Gents, with all of this excitement, with all of Kearney signing a new deal, Spurs being excellent in the Champions League, it's easy to forget that Fulham do have one more Premier League game this season. It's Newcastle.
Yeah, one more to get out of the way.
One more to get out of the way before I can get to Barnsley away, says Dom Betts.
Well, Porto's got to come first, mate.
Oh, I apologise. I apologise, of course. How, if you were Scott Parker, would you approach this game against Newcastle?
Try and win it.
Excellent.
No, I think just play the same team we've been playing in recent weeks. I think one player, I think we
Spurs have just hit the bar, Dom. They're throwing the kitchen sink at Ajax, but it isn't happening. Can they do it now? Are they still dead and buried? No,
yeah, they're dead and buried. Absolute brown bread. Absolute proper wholemeal brown bread. Done.
Half and half.
Yeah, half and half.
Best of both.
Yeah. No, I think just play the same team we've been playing in recent weeks, although I would like to see Stephen Sessegnon given a game. I've been banging on about it all season.
Yeah, we have. Because Christie is...
He's useless.
I think that's putting it generous.
But, you know, the team hasn't really changed in recent weeks. I don't think Anguissa should play. I thought he was quite poor against Wolves. I think it's his... Not necessarily his fault for the goal, but he can close down the person who... I can't remember who whips one. I think it's Matt Doherty.
Yeah,
he was in. I think he closed him down a lot quicker. But, yeah, I'd like to see the team been playing recently. You know, so Rico in goal... You know, Bennett's clearly not bat fit. There's no point playing him. You know, I don't know what Mawson's fitness is.
That's one. I'd like to see him start, actually. Yeah.
I do think playing as many players who are going to be first teamers for us in the championship would be a good thing to see. But I'd also like to also just play our best team to end the season on a win.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you this, though. Like, I mean, we've mentioned, you know, the likes of Tankovic and players like that who did play for us in the Premier League. We have obviously had some bad, very bad one-off players, you know, Eddie Johnson, whatever, who only played a couple of times. But do you think Cyrus Christie is one of the worst players to consistently played for us in the Premier League? Because I honestly think he is. Because the way we played under Slav, with the bombing on fullbacks, even the way we played under Ranieri, where we had five at the back, there's a lot of pressure on his possession to whip balls in and, you know, bomb up and down, and he's just proved
Joe Bryan's been a lot better than him.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially
exactly.
In recent weeks.
Exactly.
Joe Bryan was quality against Wolves.
Yeah, exactly. And so Joe Bryan's miles ahead of him. He's played a lot this season, Cyrus Christie. And I think for someone who's played so much, he's been so consistently bad. And I can't remember seeing a player like that for Fulham in a long time, even in the dregs in the Championship.
Sean Kavanagh.
Yeah, but I feel like he didn't play for as long stretches of time, you know? Like, we had like Dan Burn playing week in, week out, and Sean Hutchinson. They were terrible, but that was in the Championship. This is the Premier League, and he's played probably 30 games. Do you reckon he's played 30 games?
Yeah, I reckon he's played 30 games.
Yeah, which is, and he's rubbish. Like, how has he got 30 games?
Ian Pearce.
Yeah, but Ian Pearce was at the heart of a team that didn't get relegated.
Yeah.
You know,
can't say fairer than that. We've had 5 minutes added on at Ajax. There are 5 minutes left of the show here on Love Sport Radio. We will have a result for you before we leave you. Can Spurs do it? Remember, one more goal, one more away goal will see them through against Ajax on the night. Dom, when I first asked you how Scott Parker should approach Newcastle, you said he should try and win the game. Helpful as ever. In terms of specifics of how he should try to win the game, how would you approach
it? Score more goals in your position.
Wonderful, yeah.
No, I think he just play the way you've been playing in over the last month. I thought we were unlucky to not get a goal in the ball. Yesterday, a lot of chances, but I thought we were relatively tired to the back. So I think just approach it how he's been approaching the rest of the game since he's come in charge, or since he's been relegated anyway, and approach it that way. Attack Newcastle on the front foot. Get balls in the box quick early on. Let Mitch Fitch lay it off to our wingers and our attacking midfielders, and we can score from there.
I agree. I think it'd be nice for certain players to have a send-off as well. For example, it'd be nice if, I don't know, like we're talking very kind of...
It also could be Ryan Sessions' last game in the
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. We're talking quite superficial things here. Like it'd be nice if Mitrovic to get a goal. It'd be nice if Sess to get a goal.
Are you expecting the likes of Mitrovic, of Sessegnon, to come and wave goodbye to the Fulham fans? Yeah, or do you think they'll be a bit more coy than that?
I'm quite sure that... I bet their deal's already wrapped up, to be honest.
I'm 90% sure Sessegnon's off, whereas Mitrovic... No one really knows, and I think it will be Sessegnon's game to the club, which is sad in a way. But you know, you want to see the best thing for his development. You know, he can go to the very top, and it'll be good to see him go to a club that can help him achieve that, whether that is in England or abroad.
And we talk about like a player coming through the academy. You do get that kind of personal attachment to them, and especially considering it's going to be a Euros year as well next season. For him personally, it is definitely the best thing to do. And I won't begrudge him at all. I mean, we've got his stats in front of us now. He's played over 100 times for us in the league. He's scored 22 goals. And he's turning 19 this month, I believe. He's been a great, like... He's only played for us for 3 full seasons. And it's been
which
so...
Which is ludicrous when he's turning 19 next month. Or this month.
It's been a privilege, to be honest. Like, I mean, it's so nice to see a player come through at this early stage of development. He's still got a long, old career to go. As Dom said, he can go right to the top. And I think if it is goodbye on Sunday, it will be, you know, nothing but... It will be a fond farewell and it'll be like a good luck for the rest of the season.
93 minutes played at Ajax's stadium, the Johan Cruyff Arena. Spurs still haven't got that goal. They've got one more chance. Can they do it in the next 2 minutes? It's so tense. Ajax trying to take the ball to their own corner. They can't hold it. It goes out. Time wasting, pressure being applied, Vertonghen hit the bar from 5 yards. Are we still saying brown bread?
Yeah, they're dead and out.
Absolutely brown bread.
Absolutely brown bread. Does that bring you joy, gents? Is that what
yes.
you're saying?
It brings me joy to not to see other English teams doing badly in Europe. Because if I dislike them for the entirety of the season, why do I now need to like them when they're in European competition?
We've got a corner for Tottenham. Hugo Lloris is going up into that Ajax box. If Hugo Lloris scores a goal to put Tottenham in a Champions League final, it will be better than Liverpool. It will be better than Anfield. It will be more extraordinary than anything any of us could ever have conceived of. But it is looking very, very slight now. It's last chance saloon for Spurs, and Llorente has hit the crossbar.
Man.
Oh, over the bar. It clips the bar on the way over. 3 times they've been oh so close, agonisingly close, and it looks like a bridge too far. Only just a valiant effort from Tottenham. They've got about 30 seconds left to change it. Gents, it's that time of the show where I've got to ask you for your score predictions. How do you think it's going to go? Fulham versus Newcastle.
2-1 Fulham.
2-1
yeah.
Fulham?
2-0 Fulham.
And that'll make it 3 straight home wins, I believe.
Yeah, I think so. That'd be a nice way to win the season.
I remember the last time that happened in the Premier League.
No, it might be a nice high-scoring game. Like the last time we got relegated, Crystal Palace was Desmond, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a good old Desmond that game.
Yeah, lovely old Desmond. Chris Davin in the last minute, curling one in. Whatever happened to him? What a player. What a player.
Well, on a night where it's looking like Tottenham couldn't quite do it, perhaps Fulham can. They've got Newcastle coming up. They're confident, and Tottenham have done it. Right at the death, we have to leave you with the news that Tottenham have got a third and they are going to the Champions League final.
Love Sport.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.